Scott Spears back with you, hour number two today of the big program, Monday, April the 6th, 2020, 16 minutes past the hour, and we do want to thank Dr. Curtis Gingrich, Chief Operating Officer of OhioHealth Marion General Hospital, for joining us in hour number one in what I'm sure is a very busy time for him amid the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic that we're all going through right now all across this country. And as many of the experts say, we're heading into the possible worst 3 to 4 weeks of this pandemic. We've been joined by a lot of great guests on this program during this time, Dr. Art Uline, Dr. Chris Ann Gordon, of course, Dr. Gingrich, Health Commissioner here in town, Tracy Kinsler, the mayor, Scott Schertzer. And today we're going to talk to somebody, very interesting person. Brian Zwanda is his name. He is an Ohio resident, and during this, he contracted what we now know as coronavirus, COVID-19, had a tremendous episode with it, is now recovered or on the road to recovery, and has written a blog about this to help other people to learn about this disease, what it is, what it feels like, what it's all about. We are so happy this morning to be joined live via telephone by Brian Zwanda. Brian, how are you?
Good morning, Scott. I'm doing well, thank you.
Brian, just kind of to start out here, can you take us through what happened? You're an Ohio resident. How did you contract this illness, and just kind of take us through the process?
Well, I'll give you the best guess, Scott, because it's not 100% sure where exactly. I did travel internationally. I went to the London on March 1st through the 4th, and that's probably our best guess. There's clearly been cases all around Ohio, and I think many people, in looking at symptoms, have thought they may have had it even in February. So there's a chance it could have been one of those people that may have been asymptomatic I may have caught it from. But again, I think talking to the public health department, our best guess is the international travel that beginning of March.
What happened? When did you first start to feel symptoms, and what were those symptoms?
Sure. Yeah, it was about 5 days after I returned. So that was Monday, March 9th. And I woke up, I was kind of a little bit tired, but more interestingly, it was just a runny nose. And I thought, oh, you know, maybe it's kind of early allergies. Maybe I picked up a little cold on my trip or something like that. And it was very, very mild. That was a Monday. Tuesday, same thing, nothing different. Wednesday, most of the day, the same thing. But I got home on Wednesday night, and that's when I first had a fever. It was at night, and couldn't sleep at all, and it got progressively worse Thursday, Friday. That's when I reached out to my doctor, because, of course, COVID-19's in the news, and everybody's kind of hairpin trigger in terms of a response to that. And he said, no, you know, you don't have a cough. You have a really high fever, and your aches and chills and many other symptoms, gastrointestinal issues, but didn't have the cough. And he's like, so, you know, we have minimum testing right now anyway, so just hold tight, you know, self-treat at home, stay home, isolate with your family. And that was about it until Saturday morning. I woke up and I started getting a little pressure in my chest. It was this actually a really interesting feeling. I've had pneumonia before, actually, but this was weird. It was a dry, very cold sensation. And I thought, and I saw in the news that morning that they opened up drive-through testing up here at the Cleveland Clinic, and he wrote an order for me, and I got tested that morning. And the Monday morning, 2 days later, I got the news that I tested positive.
Now, Brian, how old of a guy are you, and do you have any underlying conditions?
No underlying conditions. I'm 48 years old, and but nothing, you know, nothing that would have, you know, really, really put me at risk.
And no cough here at any point?
Well, I got to the point where I had a minor cough. I mean, my fevers got, the fevers and what became the headache, the and being unable to sleep, those were the most pronounced symptoms that I had. But I did eventually get a lot of pressure in my chest, a lot of, it became kind of a dry cough, but nothing. I've heard of people that have can't even speak that they were coughing so much. And of course, if you see in the news all the time, people going to the ER and having to be put on respirators. So nothing like that. But what was interesting is I was on daily calls with the public health department. They reached out to me continuously. And I wrote in my blog that you mentioned in the intro that I felt like I was a combination. They felt like investigators, researchers, and counselors to me. Because, you know, being someone that was kind of early on in the COVID-19 response, there wasn't a whole lot to read about in terms of what the treatments were. The doctors really didn't know what to do all the time. They were kind of, you know, guessing, educated guesses, of course. But one of the things that everybody kept saying to me was, if you had shortness of breath, go to the ER. Okay. Well, I struggled with defining what shortness of breath meant. And it was around, I want to say it was the middle of that second week, probably 17th, 18th, maybe, when I was walking up the stairs and let's call it 15, 20 stairs, maybe. And I really was out of breath and I panicked because I thought all I kept hearing was these warnings, shortness of breath, go to the ER, shortness of breath, go to the ER. But thankfully, the public health department called about an hour later to do their daily check-in. And I said, I'm out of breath. And they said, well, what were you doing? I said, I was going up the stairs. And they said, oh, that's fine. As long as you're not short, you know, you have shortness of breath while you're just sitting in a chair or laying down, that's when you need to be worried. And so the chest side of things was not the most pronounced symptom. It became a nuisance, but nothing like what so many people are experiencing that have had to go to the ER and be on a respirator.
When you got the diagnosis on that Monday, and at that point, it is in the news. That is the number one story. It's the early stages of this. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking I had kind of a one-way ticket to the ER, because that's what you read about at the time. I mentioned I live up in northern Ohio. I live in Medina. And so I remember that, you know, all I saw was just the horror stories. And, of course, you know, that, you know, you're going through it. It's a fear of the unknown in many ways, and you start kind of panicking. But then there was a news broadcast, a woman in Hudson, Ohio, that she had recovered, and I really got a lot out of that, because the way she was describing her symptoms, the fact that she didn't have to go to the hospital, the fact that it was brutal, and I was, you know, in the throes of a brutal, what felt like a brutal flu, but she was there. She was standing up talking to a reporter. I got a lot out of that. And although the only thing I would have wished in that broadcast was someone would have shared the what does shortness of breath mean, because that probably would have been the last of the unknowns that I needed to tackle later in the week. But yeah, it was really more of a fear of the unknown, Scott. That was the big thing. And you know, since then you're seeing a lot of reporting now where it's 80% of cases are very, very mild or even asymptomatic. You see, you know, X percentage of that are moderate. I don't know what that number is. But and then there's obviously quite a few that have been people that have had to go to the hospital and be admitted. So, you know, it was just a fear of the unknown and just trying to navigate that. And I got to the point where I had to turn off the news. I couldn't watch it anymore. It was, you know, read a book, you know, watch a rerun, do anything other than, you know, listen to the news, watch the news, because it just fed the panic button.
Mm. What was the test like for people who haven't had it and may never will have it?
Yeah, from what I understand now, there's a couple different versions of it, but I had no idea what to expect. As I mentioned before, I went through the drive-through the first day it was open at the Cleveland Clinic up in Cleveland, and spent about two and a half hours in line. Got in there, and again, never knew. I didn't know what it was going to be about, and the person that administered it said, "Well, this is going to feel a little uncomfortable," and it was a cotton swab on a stick that. I don't know how far she put that in my nose, but it was quite a burning sensation. Lasted, 5 seconds maybe? But, yeah, it was, I didn't know what to expect on that one. And when I was first contacted by the public health department, they said I would not be released from isolation until I had two more tests that were negative. And I thought, oh, God, I don't want to go through that two more times. But turned out I didn't have to because they've changed the protocol. But, yeah. Not a very comfortable experience. Certainly have been through worse, and certainly people are going through a lot worse now.
When you were in isolation, I'm not sure, do you live with people? Do you have a family?
Yeah, I do. My wife, she is currently, she's 5 to 7 days behind me. She's never been tested, but the doctors in the public health department, she's considered an assumed, not confirmed case. So she's at home with me. And I have an 18-year-old son, senior in high school, that lives with me as well. We don't know if he did or didn't have it. If he did, it was one of those situations where it was so mild it was undetectable. And I hope he did. You know, I hope he's got this in the rearview mirror. But we never saw any symptoms of fever or anything else. So who knows? But yeah, it's just the three of us.
What was that like to have this disease that is all over the news, as you say, at that time, still is to this day, mm-hmm. and knowing that this might have been passed on to your wife and son?
Yeah, at first it was, when I started feeling really bad, that was the March 11th, that day or that evening, I didn't isolate myself for my wife and son. But overnight when I started feeling bad, and of course, kind of that alarm bell goes off, that's when we all kind of really tried to physically separate. But she was taking care of me. I mean, I was a mess. And, she was washing her hands, doing her best. I was wearing a mask at that time as much as I possibly could. But, there was this kind of dread that, it's inevitable. How are we going to be under the same roof, even though we're trying to be so far apart? We all separated. My son moved into the basement. I moved to the top floor of our house. My wife's, of course, in the bedroom on the main floor. We tried our best. And, it was around, I want to say it was March 19th-ish, somewhere right around there, or maybe it was March 20th, when she started getting the symptoms too. And so, I felt horrible because in many ways, again, if it's correct in that I went to the UK and picked this up, and even though coronavirus was, it was definitely in the news in Asia and continental Europe, I felt a huge amount of regret and guilt for bringing that home. And, I thought, play Monday morning quarterback, gosh, I wish I didn't go on that trip. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I thought of that. And, but thankfully, at least for she and I, we've been in more of that moderate category and not having to be admitted to the ER.
Being in the moderate category, you've talked about it being a severe flu. What exactly did it feel like at its worst?
I had a roller coaster set of fevers for 9 days. So it was, the mid 99s all the way to right, just shy. I never registered 104, but it was always like 103.789 every evening. The chills and the aches that come with it. I had the strangest, this was actually one where it led me to call the doctor because I was super worried. I had this, it was like a silver dollar on the side of my head, the most shooting pains the worst things I've ever experienced. I didn't know what to do with it. I literally had a frozen bag of peas on my head. I tried everything. And that forced, that led to me not being able to sleep, the gastrointestinal issues, and then of course it developed, which was the kind of that chest tightening coldness, little bit of congestion, a little bit of a cough, but it was, you know, the fevers and everything that kind of came along with it and trying to battle dehydration, that, you know, that was, for me, that was the worst of it. For my wife, same general thing. She had a little bit more of the chest congestion. She had more of the shortness of breath. And then, you know, towards the end of it all, for both of us, it's just an energy thing. We're just really weak by, you know, the afternoon, the evenings, going to bed early because there was just, you know, there was no fuel left in the tank.
Mm. What was the duration of this for you?
For me, if I start with the day that I had the runny nose and all the way to the point where I did not have a fever, that would have been exactly 14 days. My wife is probably, she had less severe symptoms, but she's had a longer duration of just no energy. She's probably closer to 18 days. And she's still, you know, she's still at home and still, you know, resting. So, yeah, 14 to 18 days for the two of us. And again, when, you know, I was, so if I use March 9th, March 20th was the point where, I didn't have a fever and I was not taking, Tylenol or Advil. That was my duration.
What was the treatment for you being at home to treat this illness?
That was an interesting one, and there's still a lot of debate on this one. So when I first was tested positive, the doctor said, you know, Tylenol, Advil, you know, and just stay hydrated. Those were really that was it. And I asked the question, well, if I develop a cough, should I take a cough, you know, any kind of cough medication? And the answer was, no, I don't think so. So I, you know, stayed the course there. It was interesting, before I tested positive, before they thought maybe I just had the flu, they did give me, they wrote me a prescription for Tamiflu, but as soon as I tested positive, they told me I had to stop taking, or didn't have to stop taking, but it wasn't something that was prescribed for COVID-19. Because of the severe fevers that I experienced, the doctor gave me some pretty specific guidance. It was 800 milligrams of Advil every 8 hours. And 1,000 milligrams of Tylenol every 8 hours, and those were, you know, separated by 4 hours each. And that really did get to the point of helping to control the fever, started helping with the aches and pains, and to a certain degree even the headaches. But, you know, a big part of it was just staying hydrated. There's a lot of debate right now, and when I wrote the blog that I did and I mentioned my use of Advil, I got a lot of responses. People saying that they had read that you shouldn't take Advil. People saying that, you know, there's been, that it worsens the symptoms, that people with the most severe reactions to COVID-19 had ibuprofen or Advil in their system. What's interesting is that for me, my experience and what my doctor prescribed, that's what I followed. I followed the advice of my doctor religiously in that regard. And it worked for me. I'm not an MD. I'm not a researcher. I know that on the CDC and World Health Organization websites, it doesn't say that there's a problem taking Advil, but there's a lot of doctors that feel very strongly about that. The key here, I think, is anybody going through this, ask a lot of questions of your physician and follow his or her advice.
As you're going through this, and it's developing in the news as it still is, what was your worst fear during this entire episode?
Well, at first it was, what's coming up next? Because as you correctly asked, you watch the news, you see all these horrible situations that people are going through. For me, it was, well, how bad is it going to get, and when am I going to have to, you know, take a trip to the ER? That was really it. And because this was, well, still is so new, and there's really not a prescribed treatment plan, I felt like, you know, we were experimenting along the way. I mean, in the most simplest form, all I was taking Advil and Tylenol, that was it. And I, you know, it's like, well, is there something else I could or should be doing? And the reality, the answer is no. My doctor, that was all he mentioned. And, you know, when I talked to the public health department, well, all they were hearing was the same thing that my doctor was telling me to do. So it was fear of, is there something else I could do? Is there anything else I should be doing? You know, when's this going to end? Because it felt like, you know, time was just dragging on, and I just wanted it over.
Now we hear an awful lot about social distancing, 6 feet apart, all kinds of changes have happened. You can't go into a restaurant, certain stores are shut down, certain businesses are shut down. When you look at this now, as somebody who has had it, what do you think when you look just throughout Ohio at this point?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I wouldn't wish this on anybody, and I hope everybody follows all the guidance that they possibly can to avoid, contracting this disease. It's horrible. When I was released from my order of isolation and I went out to the grocery store for the first time, it was a different world, Scott. A lot of people who, may have been, in society as things were gradually, tightening down and things were closing, may have seen this, see it evolve slowly. I left my house and it was a different world. Going down an aisle in a grocery store is like people, diving away from one another. But I will tell you this much, I would religiously follow the guidance and with the hand washing, the social distancing, and doing everything possible to slow the spread of this, and hopefully, everyone avoids contracting this disease.
You say you've had pneumonia in your life. Where does this illness rank?
Yeah, this is definitely worse. And I think it was just the prolonged nature of it. I was always worried. I've always been susceptible to chest colds. That's just my thing. And I've had pneumonia twice, and it was bad. This was far worse. I mean, just the duration of it, the fevers, the aches, the pains, they're very, very unique. Even the chest experience was unique. It was just that dry cough. There was nothing to it. It was just there. This was much worse than what you would normally experience with the common flu or even pneumonia.
As a fear for society, as we head into what they say will be the worst period of this, what is your biggest concern at this point?
Well, I they talk about flattening the curve. I hope we do. I hope that, places where we've seen a spike can come out of this as quickly as possible, that the resource shortages that you hear and read about don't materialize, or at least are hopefully very short-lived. Hopefully people don't treat this as a political event, but just work together to be able to, the average person stays home, and the healthcare workers continue to be heroes, and government continues to work together to be able to get resources into the right place. That's my hope. And again, it does sound like this is supposed to be one of the peak weeks, and gosh, I hope they're wrong about that. But and it's much less impactful than they're predicting.
When we look at it from somebody who has had it, what advice would you give to somebody at this point as far as how to get through it?
Yeah, there's a couple things I'd probably suggest is that, don't be shy about contacting your physician. I was a little bit hesitant to do so because I just assumed that my doctor was going to be super busy, and I thought, gosh, I don't want to overwhelm the system by asking questions. That was probably a regret on my part because I think it did cause undue stress. And, since then, talking to people and hearing doctors talk about it, telling their patients not to be hesitant to contact them, contact and ask questions, express a concern. That would be my number one. And that's super important. Not hesitate to ask for help from, I was so fortunate. I've got such great family and friends in the area. Everybody wanted to help, and I called upon a few of them to do so because as soon as I tested, even before I tested positive, my wife, son, and I quarantined ourselves. So luckily we kind of had most of everything that we needed anyway, but there were a few things that we didn't predict and we ran short of. And being able to rely on a network and, when people offer to help, take them up on it and return the favor if, once you come out of it and perhaps they get sick or they're quarantining out of abundance of caution. But those are probably the biggies. And just be careful what you read and what you listen to, and just rely on the advice of your physician. That's number one.
How did the blog come about?
Well, I wrote the blog, it would have been 8 days ago, I think it was. It was on a Sunday morning, and I thought about it, and I was thinking, what was my experience like? What was this all about? You know, there's if the government projections are true, there's going to be a lot of people getting sick right about now, and there clearly were. And I thought, I'm going to share the experience of what the journey looked like, which was, you know, I got sick. Didn't seem like anything at first. So that was kind of what I wanted people to take something away from that. What the treatment and what the process looked like engaging with government and the medical profession. The fact that not everybody goes to the hospital, but at the same time, you know, there's people are, you know, doctors and nurses and patients are using their best judgment to treat something that they've never seen before. And as a result of that, there's that fear of the unknown. And then I wanted to share with people, you know, what it took to kind of be released from isolation, what that process looked like. And even though it was one county, one state, they were following the CDC guidelines. So I thought I'd share that experience as well. I had no idea that blog would be as popular as it was. I didn't. And by the way, I happen to be, I do business continuity and crisis management consulting. And so the idea of sharing this experience was meant for, at first, kind of my clients, so that in case they started having people get sick in their workplaces, that they had kind of a firsthand account that they could share and maybe rely upon and possibly adjust their, you know, their response strategies accordingly. And what was interesting was the when people zeroed in on, or at least the comments that I've gotten back on it, was they were very happy to hear people talk about kind of the fear side of it, not just all the symptoms, but just the fear side. And people that were in the middle of the illness read it, people that had come out of it and said, yeah, you know, that was my thing too. Thanks for sharing. I'm glad we're talking about the mental side, not just the physical side. And so, you know, I'm glad that happened. I'm glad people had that reaction. I had no idea. I was just trying to chronicle the journey. And maybe it would be helpful if people understood kind of the, well, for lack of a better term, the technical journey of, you know, what COVID-19 is when you're diagnosed, confirmed, you know, and eventually released. So, yeah, I don't know why I did it fully, or, you know, I don't have a perfect answer for you, but I'm glad I did it, and there's a lot of people that have been happy to hear that and have kind of reinforced, and now we're talking about the mental health side of this thing.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about that, because it is a big issue, panic, worry, stress right now that is going through a lot of people, whether they're stuck at home or whether they are going through this themselves. How do you deal with that?
You kind of almost say, I will tell you this much. I felt there were times where I literally talked to myself in the middle of the night and said, you know, Brian, you're going to get through this. You know, you're not even going to remember most of this, you know, in the weeks ahead. Just calm down. You know, you're able to breathe. That's the most important thing. Yeah, this is really painful. This is clearly not fun. Drink water. Eat as much as you can, even though you have no appetite. You know, you get through. You kind of talk to yourself a lot. And when it got really, really bad, that's when those counselors at the public health department, when they called every day, you kind of saved up your questions, and you hear them tell you over and over again, you know, others are going through the same thing. Others are feeling the same way. We're hearing this all the time. You know, hang in there. You know, just remember, if you can't, you're having trouble breathing while you're sitting in a chair, that's when we're going to go to the next level of treatment. But you're not alone. Doctors, kind of the same thing when you reached out to them. And so you almost kind of try to create an informal community around yourself. But part of that for me was, I hate to say it, or it sounds strange, but it was talking to myself about it and just trying to give myself a little bit of a pep talk.
Was there ever a fear in your mind, or did it ever cross your mind that this could be the end? So many people have died from it at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was interesting. And you get this balancing act of what you hear and read about, which is people without pre-existing conditions or autoimmune issues, they're probably going to be just fine. And I knew I fell into that category. But at the same time, there's these people that are pro. I mean, right before our call here today, Scott, I was watching something on the Today Show, and it was a 44-year-old man who had he'd run multiple marathons in the last couple of years, and he found himself on a respirator, getting worse and worse and worse. And so you hear those too, and he didn't have a pre-existing condition. So I'd seen and listened to and read those types of stories too, and it incites panic. And because you don't know what, you don't know if, what your situation happens to be. Maybe there is something that I have that, would cause me to be, more susceptible to some of the extreme situations or symptoms with COVID-19. I just didn't know. But and that's where you get into this hyper focus on your symptoms. And, you asked the question of how I felt, with giving this to my wife. And I, of course, feel horrible about that. But I'm, in a way, glad I had it first because I had it first and she and I had such similar situations, similar experiences, I was at least able to reassure her. I felt like that for 2 days and, just don't overdo it. Don't overexert yourself. You'll be fine. I'm watching you. I'm keeping an eye on you, that kind of thing. And, going through this, you're always hyper-focused on, what's that next level? Is it going to escalate? And, how am I going to deal with that? What's my plan? And, it's just something you're going to have to go through.
As you go to the grocery store and drive around here in Ohio, do you think at this point that people fully get what's going on, that this is a pandemic, that 1918 was the last pandemic, and that nationally it's possible that nearly 250,000 people will die from this by the time it's over?
Well, I see a lot of people behaving very, very differently than they did, a month ago. You see a lot of fewer people. You see people consciously distancing themselves. Most of my experiences so far, Scott, is grocery store and going to pick up takeout food. And definitely you see people taking it seriously. Of course, you see on the news some of the extreme cases of people not taking it seriously. But, you hope that they do. You're seeing more and more people wearing masks now. You're seeing more and more people grab the hand sanitizer when they're touching a shopping cart. You're seeing behavioral changes, and quite frankly, some of these things we should probably be keeping long after COVID-19.
Why do you think the grasp took so long? Here in Ohio, a lot of people feel that we have had very strong leadership, that our governor was out there very early with this, and yet he had to physically shut down these places. It took that for people to understand.
Yeah, you use the right word, leadership. I mean, those were tough, tough calls. They were not very popular at first, and now he's deservingly, receiving accolades for the leadership and the tough calls that he made. It's very hard for people, I think, that ultimately, if you're an owner of a restaurant or owner of a bar, to be able to make that call on your own because you're ultimately, creating some significant pain for yourself and your family. And sometimes this is where government does have to step in and make the tough call. And, so that's the balancing act of regulation versus kind of complete free open enterprise. So, all I can say is that, I commend, the governor and the health director on much of what they've done, if not all of what they've done, because, Ohio's in a much better place than a lot of other states.
As we sit here and look at this right now, one of the big unknowns that seems to worry people the most is, when will life be what it was before this? We have a stay-at-home order now through May the 1st, so we know it's going to be at least a month. From what you've read, what you've seen, and we're all guessing at this point, what would you guess is when we might be able to go to a restaurant again, when we might be able to go to a grocery store without a mask on, that this might be back to at least some kind of normal?
Yeah, well, this is like you, this would be a guess. And I don't think we're going to wake up on May 2nd, everything's exactly the same. We're crammed into bars, crammed into restaurants, we're back at the gym, we're doing all the things that we did back in February. I think there's going to be a new normal. There's going to be some. There's going to be, I think, a gradual return, and also at the same time, you know, again, vaccines and if this disease morphs at all, you know, we all have to be prepared for kind of a second wave. And so, you know, getting back to some of these painful decisions that have been made, you know, we may be seeing this again in November, December, January. Who knows? But again, they're all guesses. And we just, as a society, as families, as individuals, we need to be prepared.
Having had this illness, has it taught you anything personally?
You know, yes, in many ways. And I mentioned kind of that Monday morning quarterback feel of, gosh, I wish I didn't go to London on March 1st through the 4th. You know, sometimes you feel bulletproof. Sometimes you hear and read about something, wow, that'll never happen to me. Maybe there's a degree of, I should be a little bit more conservative when things like this are happening, and recognizing that, you know, I don't have to travel there. I know that's the perfect situation. It's probably okay if I did it virtually. You know, things like that. It's just made me think about and be, you know, maybe in the future be a little bit more conservative in some of the decisions, because not only am I affecting myself, I'm affecting others. Those are the thoughts that I've been thinking. Those are the thoughts I've had. And at the same time, I've been thinking about what is, you know, not only the new normal, but what are some of these things that we're doing today that actually are just good practice, whether at a personal level, a business level, so on and so forth. And so, yeah, I've been thinking about those things too.
Have you ever thought about what happened here? 102 years since the last pandemic, and here we are in a society where we talk on cell phones, we text message, we FaceTime, we have computers, we have the best technology we've ever had, and here this comes. On Monday, we weren't talking about it at all, and by Friday, the public school system is shut down in Ohio. How does that happen?
Yeah, and when you think about that situation, I mean, you know, before COVID-19, if you look back and look at all of the research on pandemics, even before the Spanish flu of 1918, I mean, the research indicated this was supposed to be happening every 35 to 40 years, and we were long overdue. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, some people in some circles have talked about it at a preparedness level, but not really taking it seriously because it's been so long. There's very, very few people that are alive today that were alive in 1918. So, you know, it's that kind of an out of sight, out of mind. We've navigated Ebola, we've navigated MERS and SARS and H1N1 and all of those other acronyms that were in the news years ago. Why not this time? Why can't we, you know, why, how could this thing ever get that big? Well, this is beyond anyone's imagination, but there's so much to learn from. And I'm sure there'll be a time here shortly where we'll reflect on this. It'll hopefully be in the rearview mirror, and you know, we can be a more resilient society as a result.
And just because a lot of people are dealing with this and are at least going to deal with it for another month, being home now more than we were before, social distancing, all these things that are going on, how are you filling the time?
Well, I'm working from home, so I'm able to do that. So that's a big part of it. And by the way, Scott, I travel a lot. And so this is a very, very different situation, you know, than I've ever accustomed to. I was in the military, I traveled then. When I got into the private sector, I traveled, in some cases, 100% of the time. So this is different. And I have to admit, I actually really like it. And being home, not in this extreme sense where it's like being forced into kind of more of a quarantine, isolation, lockdown, but I do like being home more. And I've personally adjusted pretty well. Clearly, not everybody can work from home, and this is a tough situation. Like I mentioned before, I have a senior in high school who's pretty much lost the second half of his senior year, and it's tough to watch things like graduation, prom, lacrosse season, as an example, kind of go up in the air, and I feel bad for that. And so that's, you know, we're trying to find kind of the positives. We're doing some fun things at home that we never thought to do, and kind of gets you back focused on family, which is a wonderful thing. So that's kind of, I guess, the silver lining. But, you know, it's an adjustment, pure and simple.
Do you think, a lot of people have said this, that life was going so fast, and we heard it from all different outlets. People were going to practices. People were going to school. People had homework. People were out till 8 or 9 o'clock at night. Nobody was eating dinner anymore. We were all text messaging. We don't get together like we used to. Has this changed that permanently? Are we, in some way, is that a silver lining? Have we fixed that problem?
Well, I'll tell you what, it was a I think I fell into that category, that trap of, you know, being overscheduled and, you know, the idea of kind of everybody sitting down for dinner, you know, every evening as a family. Yeah, that seemed to be becoming few and far between. So I think you're spot on in that assessment. And I know I've learned something from it. My wife and I have talked about it a lot. We've reflected on that. And I hope there's a degree of, you know, we do slow down a little bit and we kind of return to some of those more traditional things that, you know, that seem to have evaporated kind of in the, you know, here we are in 2020.
Here we are in 2020. And as we look forward, are you optimistic? As somebody who had it, I would think it might be a little harder to be optimistic from the news we hear day to day. Are you optimistic?
I am. I really, you know, this is, you know, whether pandemics typically have multiple waves. So I think we need to be prepared for that. And that's kind of the gloom side of it. And people are experiencing a lot of pain, both economically and, of course, health-wise. But hopefully as a society that once we're given the green light to get as close to normal as possible, hopefully we snap back and, you know, we get to a point where, you know, we catch up on the things that we've put aside and people return to normal as much as possible. That's my hope. And I am very optimistic. I think our society is very resilient by nature.
In our final 3 minutes, there's something you said earlier that I do want to talk about, because the news is there. It is the front page of every newspaper. It is on your social media. It is radio. It is television. It is every corner you could go to right now. And you said you had to get away from it. What's the best advice in that category?
Well, I mean, I literally had to turn it off, Scott. It was pure and I just literally had to turn it off. I played solitaire, Sudoku. I read books that had nothing to do with disease. It was, I just tried to get away from it. And yeah, you know, when I turned certain things on, you know, checked in on it like maybe once a day at the end of it, but you know, like that second week, you know, I might have, you know, watched a little bit of the news at 6:30. I might have, you know, opened up, you know, my favorite news website to take a look at things, you know, just to check in and see what's going on. You know, it was that kind of thing, but it was more by exception than the norm. I certainly didn't have, you know, CNN or Fox News or whatever your favorite, you know, channel is sitting there in the background 24/7. I mean, I think that would have just been mentally unhealthy. And so, you know, I made the choice to just really disconnect to a certain degree. And by the way, it's interesting. There's kind of a channel that comes in when people find out you're sick, and they're very, very well intentioned, of course, but they start texting you things, and they text you links to this or links to that, you know, advice on treatments, and here's what's going on in Medina County, and you know, things like that. And you're like, wow, I can even get overwhelmed, you know, without even turning on, you know, my favorite news channel, because people are trying to provide that to me. So it's really hard to get away from it, you know, and again, all people, you know, being very well intentioned, but it's tough. You know, it comes at you from all angles, especially when you're, you know, in the middle of it.
Absolutely. Brian, if people want to read your blog, what's the best way to do that?
It's on my website. It's spelled AVALU, T as in Tom, ION.com, and just go to the resources area.
Brian, it's been a pleasure talking with you. I'm so glad you're well and feeling better, and we'll see what happens here. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Brian Zwanda, a man who has had COVID-19 here in Ohio, Medina, in the Medina area, and he has made it through it, as well as his wife and 18-year-old son. It's interesting. Mid-morning coffee break with Adam Lepp comes up at 10:10 this morning. We also have Voice of a People at 4:10 today and the Mike Wilson Show at 5:10. And I will be back tomorrow. Don't miss that. Stay tuned. I'm out.
101.1 FM. We're in tune with WWGH, and we have a lot for you today, including the person we've been talking about for such a long time that was going to come again to WWGH, Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers.
Speedy delivery.
Hey! Boy, that sure sounds familiar.
This is WWH